Probing space and time. Probing for the truth. What is this phenomena? What are they? From where or whence do they come? What is their purpose? Why is it happening? Why do they both reveal and lurk in the shadows simultaneously? This is the probe.
And welcome to The Probe. This is a talk show centered on UFOs and assorted cultural phenomena. Ufology seems to have infiltrated and saturated our society, our music, our movies, our books, our TV shows, our t-shirts, you name it, posters.
Hats,
yes. we've got club hats here as well. What? Seems like every corner of our culture has been impacted by ufology. And my usual probationists, Edward Deep Throat O'Reilly, Robert Frohickey Selby, and myself, Mark O'Connor, are going to entertain you for the next hour with our wit and insight. And we're going to talk about some of the themes that have arisen in ufology, common themes and elements of UFOs. And in the second half of the program, we're going to delve into the X-Files and just explore some favorite episodes, some themes, some favorite characters on X-Files, which is a favorite show of mine and Robert Selby's.
Well, I'll chime in here, but I'm going to refer you to our resident X-Files expert, Robert Selby. I'm more of a Trekkie guy. He's more of a Philian? He's more of an X. I can believe that.
I'm more of an Xian.
Yeah, an Xian, yeah.
Well, actually, I'm more of a fan than an expert, but
okay.
I really...
Yeah, you never want to call yourself an expert. Someone can easily make you look like a monkey on something when you use that word, so I see why you would avoid it for sure. But listen, anyway, let's keep the X-Files stuff for a little later in the show. And I thought we would just kick around some and debate some ideas about UFOs. I know that we had Stan Friedman on our show, and he often talks about government secrecy. And I know Ed is totally in tune with Stanton on that. And maybe we could just talk about secrecy and that sort of stuff and see where that goes.
Okay, why is the government being so secretive? Okay, why is the government being... Because that's a question that many have asked, apart from what may or may not be coming here or crashing here. Well, apart from the fact that that's their fallback default position anyway. You know, it's not just about that they're secretive about, you know. Friedman calls Roswell a cosmic Watergate. Well, of course, Watergate was the... now we've got Putin Gate in the States, so, I mean, there's always some kind of a gate going on. But anyway, this... government official told him, he kind of half smiled at him. I guess it must have been not just a telephone interview, but you know, face to face, if not an interview, then a conversation. And he kind of half smiled at him, and he said two words. And the guy looked at him kind of puzzled, and he says, "What two words?" "Orson Welles." And he said, "What do you mean, Orson?" "Yeah, they're my compatriots are already going to sleep." "Well,
it's Orson Welles."
If you don't notice any change in the program because my compatriots are asleep, that's their default position anyway. So, I mean, you don't have to worry about that, folks. I'll carry the ball, as I usually have to do. I'm getting some glares now. They're suddenly woken up. They're not sleeping anymore. Anyway, according to this government official, and take this for what it's worth, the government saw whatever size panic there was in 38, came to the conclusion that, as Jack Nicholson said in that famous movie, "You can't handle the truth," and decided they couldn't release this information because we, the general public, can't handle it. That may have some validity to it. I don't think it should apply now because we've had 2001, we've had Star Wars, we've had Star Trek. I don't think people are, if they somehow came forward tomorrow and said, "Guess what, all that alien visitation stuff, it's true," I don't think people are going to start taking swan dives off tall buildings because of that in 2017, the way they might have back in 1938. But anyway, that is, and I mentioned that to Friedman. He says, yes, there was a panic. So
you're happy that there was a panic?
I still have that smile pasted on my face. And every time I think of Stanton Friedman, well, this guy is doing a snore, but you know, you're making fun of Stanton Friedman is all I can say. I mean, I'm shocked at the lack of respect for
him. Well, I have great respect for Stanton Friedman.
Then you should have great respect for his opinions.
Well, we have the thing about, are there aliens and visitations and that sort of thing? That's a subject we've visited on previous episodes of The Probe. And the War of the Worlds thing, and what Stanton Friedman said, which is that governments, if they were in possession of such information, would have defensible good reasons for not disclosing it. The thought that it would...
Well, he even alluded that to our interview. Yeah. Remember, he said, you were kind of surprised at it, and I think I was kind of surprised at it, too. In some sense, he doesn't blame them for covering up. And, of course, the other question is, well, then why are you trying to break the cover up for 50 years?
Well, the other thing that Stan brought up was really consistent with Bob's favorite science fiction movie and the speech by Clow 2, The Day the Earth Stood Still, the 1950s version, which is that they were very worried about man's emergent nuclear technology, which, of course, in the headlines today, still threatens us, right, with North Korea.
Well, what did they do with that emergent nuclear technology? They promptly, as soon as they got it, they destroyed two cities with it.
Right. So there's this thought that, so if you accept two things, one, that there's extraterrestrial life that is visiting Earth, then there's the question about, well, why? Do they have an agenda? Do they have a thought? And the very first thing is, well, they're worried about our warlike tendencies, right? We've talked about that in previous episodes, for sure. And their whole speech about Clow 2, which was a nuanced speech, which was, we're peaceful, but, you know, if you guys get out of hand, we'll deal with you. You won't like it.
We don't care how you run your planet, but...
Right. But another theme that emerges in ufology in terms of why they're coming is this notion of that they are coming because they've reached the end of their civilization's expectancy. They need new stock. This idea that they're going to colonize Earth, hybrids. Yeah. Right. And in fact, I've got this old book that I found in an old box in the basement.
Are you sure we're allowed to talk about such things on the air, Mark?
Settle down, Fro Hickey.
Yes, you know, you guys may have to take
Look who's suddenly woken up.
You may have to take some saltpeter. So, anyway,
mean sulfur and molasses?
Yes. This book is called UFO Abductions, True Cases of Alien Kidnappings, very breathless kind of case studies.
Who's the author?
Written by D. Scott Rogo, which I have no idea. That could be a pen name for sure. And it was written in the mid-70s, so this is an old, old book, but it's kind of instructive. And they talk about the amazing case of Antonio Boas, who is an itinerant worker in Brazil. We're talking 1961. So if we think Roswell is 47.
Heard of that case.
And Aztec, 47. Yeah. It's the amazing case of Antonio Boas. So I'm going to read you a very short passage that really tells you where we're going here in terms of why aliens are coming. He says, and this is in his first person, "This is incredible, a situation I found myself in. I think that the liquid that they rubbed on my skin was the cause of this. All I know is that I became uncontrollably excited sexually, a thing that had never happened to me before," which I find a bit hard to believe, but anyway. "Yeah. I ended up by forgetting everything, and I caught hold of the woman." This is an alien woman that has been brought into this room on a spaceship, on a UFO. "Responded to her caresses with other and greater caresses. It was a normal act.
How can I get some of this liquid?"
"And she behaved just as any woman would, as she did yet again after more caresses. Finally, she was tired and breathing rapidly. I was still keen, but she was now refusing, trying to escape to avoid me to finish with it all. When I noticed this, I cooled off too. This was what she wanted of me, a good stallion to improve their own stock. In the final count, that's all it was. I was angry because I had been used." All right, so 1961, one of the earliest cases, and we already have the UFO ufology morphing into another thought, which is the aliens aren't necessarily so troubled by our warlike tendencies. They've got their own agenda, and it might be to somehow improve their genetic pool, which actually is something that's happened amongst earthly tribes for millennia, that you would raid the neighboring village and capture women and improve your stock and that sort of thing. So in that sense, it's kind of a continuation of tradition or traditional myths.
Wasn't there a really, I've never seen it, but there was a really corny sci-fi film of the 50s. It was called Mars Needs Women.
The message is, Mars needs women.
These were the words that startled the world. This was the reason for an invasion that shocked the Earth. Martians, beings from outer space, with one prime objective. Women, Earth women, to help repopulate their dying planet, to bring new blood to an ancient civilization. Beauty and the beasts, only the beasts were men, Martian men, and every woman checked and double-checked. Only the most perfect, the most beautiful. Is Earth to be ravished because Mars needs women?
You ever hear of that one?
No, Ed, I have to say.
I didn't see it. I heard it.
Somewhere in my education, I missed that movie.
I just wanted to see if there are any aliens out there that have...
You're volunteering?
No, that have some of that liquid. Ed would like to have some.
Oh, yeah. Listen. Who wouldn't want to have some? Right.
I think they used to be advertised in the back of comic books, didn't they? You send away for it?
Yeah.
That and X-ray goggles.
Sounds like... Cosmic Viagra or something.
Yes, well they have an advanced civilization. It'd be Viagra on steroids.
What do you guys think of this is another government sponsored theory that I've heard before, like a cover up that the government, mainly the United States, I guess, they encouraged this UFO mania because they thought if people were talking about unidentified flying objects, it would kind of distract from their advanced warfare vehicle research, the vehicles that they were developing for wars, and some of them were a little bit space age. And so they kind of encouraged those UFO stories, and they thought it was kind of good, even though they tried to debunk it. But people were concentrating on that instead of concentrating on what they were spending the money on in the Defense Department.
That's certainly possible.
Really, it's like a magic trick, isn't it? Get you to take your eye off the ball, so to speak, to miss what's really going on that's really important. So sure, the government could have agents that draw your attention to reports and encounters and incidents that are really far-fetched and not really credible and not to be believed, just to create doubt about the incidents that would be more credible, that actually maybe do have a basis in reality and are legitimate. So just a way of keeping the public distracted and keeping the conversation at the level of a little green man, or if someone's reporting things like, this is going to be hard to believe, just that whole thing that you can't report it seriously and take it seriously, create doubt for sure. And who knows, maybe this kind of sex with alien kind of thing is of that ilk for sure. But at the same time, I want to introduce it as a theme, this idea that aliens are coming to planet Earth to replenish their DNA, assuming it's even the same, which is a pretty big assumption. We don't know anything. But there's this theme that emerges and emerged early on and continues to this day of, we want hybrids, we want to colonize Earth and so forth, something that we'll be talking about when we get to the X-Files.
Heard that theory before?
I've heard that. And I've also, which ties into this, I've heard of another, I don't know the guy's name, it wasn't Stanton Friedman, but he was able to get, and I don't remember the guy he got a hold of, except that his position was very high. He was one of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the first, not George W. Bush, but George H.W. Bush, the guy who got in after Reagan, 88, I think he was elected. So this would be the time, he was a one-termer, so it would sometime between the years 1988 and 1992 when Bill Clinton got in. And he was way up there. And the guy was quite matter-of-fact. And he asked the guy, is it possible that some of what is being, as Bobby just said, maybe used as a cover for secret government activity? Are some of the UFO reports probably, quote, ours, unquote? And this Joint Chief said yes.
I guess if there are high government officials, someone associated with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, confirming in fact, that they use disinformation. It would be certainly confirmation of this theory. Of course, we're not actually giving anyone a name or citing a person or doing any research, just kind of throwing it out there that someone on YouTube is saying, we use disinformation. But that wouldn't be surprising. I mean, that would be a tactic governments have used, particularly in warfare, in times of war, using disinformation and so forth, propaganda, whatever, to draw your attention away.
But then he said something rather extraordinary. And the guy at the time, you know, you hear something, you don't pick it up right away. And then once the interview's over, and this was a phone interview, I think it's on YouTube somewhere. I haven't looked, but I think it's recorded. And what he said was that the Joint Chief said, yes, there's no question that some of it is human technology back engineered. And of course, what the UFO guy said, well, wait a minute, this is the leading edge of UFO activity. And one of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you know, really high in the military, just said that, yes, there is some misidentification between alien and human technology, but that this cutting-edge human technology was back-engineered. Well, the question, you know, obviously question first and foremost to mind, is back-engineered from what? You know, we're talking the cutting edge, the leading, I say human technology, but of course the Americans would have been on the forefront of that, certainly the Americans and the Russians. And if they're the best they've got has been back engineered, well, back engineered means you copy something. So what do they copy?
Yeah,
that's extraordinary. Well, you think of the implications of it.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about that before, and yeah. I'm a total skeptic on that whole thing about human progress being back engineered from UFO technology.
Well, that's what the Joint Chiefs guy said.
Yeah. I don't believe it, because when you think about it, they say, well, you know, computers, for instance. And it's like, well, we know. You can study the origins of computers and who made the thoughts and the advances and created the first computer. And we started with, you know, eventually with transistors. It's like, there's no spaceships coming from advanced civilizations that are using silicone-based transistors. You don't back engineer it because that's what they had in it. The whole notion of it, I find.
So you think our technology is too primitive to have been back engineered, basically, from something advanced like that?
Well, right. Well, I mean, isn't that obvious?
Yeah, that is a good point. But on the other hand, let's go back to the Aztec case that we talked about in our last show. Seems to be even a more, I wouldn't say more credible, but more witnesses, and actually not just pieces of a spacecraft over a farmer's field as in Roswell, but an intact saucer that crashed on top of a mesa.
A whole ship
that they were crawling all over. Don't you think, and the military descended, of course, don't you think if they carted that away, they'd try to copy it?
Well, sure, they would.
A leads to B, right? Of course they would.
I tend to believe the witnesses in those cases that there were ships, and then that's the question. What did they do with the ships when they spirited them away? If they didn't take advantage of them with all the scientists that are in the employ of the government.
They certainly would try. And
if you were back engineering a crashed UFO from Aztec or Roswell or wherever, the first thing that would appear is not like a primitive computer. You'd be starting off with quantum computers right off the...
Yeah,
right,
but you're leaving one essential aspect out of this. They would try to back engineer, but if you gave a monkey a computer and told him to build another computer, would he be able to do it?
Not only would the monkey not be able to do it, but neither would I.
Well, my point being is that we might have this advanced technology, but we are simply too primitive and too stupid, relatively speaking, to copy it effectively. It may be so far advanced that we might look at it and say, huh?
Right, that seems more likely to me, which is, you know.
But I think they would try.
Well, sure, you would try, but this notion that the Joint Chief of Staff has said we've back engineered it from some sort of extraterrestrial technology, I just think the whole thing is conspiracy theory land. I can't go that far.
But what would they do with the ship, though? Wouldn't they try to do, as Bobby just said, wouldn't they try to copy it? They're not just going to stick it in a vault somewhere and ignore it.
I kind of have a question, you know, sort of thinking out loud. What level of secrecy do you think is acceptable amongst governments when it comes to the the kind of technology that we're talking about. In other words, perhaps capture technology that, let's say, we North Americans, if we can put ourselves in the same boat, don't want other parts of the world to know about. What level do you think is acceptable? I think the public should be informed about a lot of things, but is there a certain amount of information that you think is acceptable for governments to withhold from the public?
Well, there's going to be a certain amount of withholding because governments compete. That's inevitable. Whether it's proper to do that, or not.
But that's not Bob's question, Ed. Bob's question is, do governments have a right to withhold, and if so, how much?
Well, I think they're going to do it, whether they have a right to do it or not. But I don't think they have a right.
You should be a politician because you're really good at evading the question there.
What I don't think they have a right to withhold is if we have been contacted by...
The Orson Welles party.
Yeah. If we have been contacted by either through crashes or through some kind of official contact, if they know that extraterrestrial craft have visited the Earth, then every person on the face of the Earth has a right to know that. That's basic, fundamental nature of the universe, and how dare they keep that a secret from us.
Okay, now you and I are agreeing.
Yeah.
I think...
Where do they get off?
Well, Uranus, that's where they get off.
But... Speak for yourself.
the show just went...
Subject for another show.
The show just went in the wrong direction.
Yeah, Bobby just woke up again.
But that's a good question, Bob. You know, really, a good question for a point of debate for us is how much should the government withhold?
Okay, you and I
don't think they have a right to withhold.
And I just said they don't have a right. What do you think?
Well, I guess the next question is, do we have an enemy? I mean, when the Cold War so-called ended, when the Berlin Wall came down, supposedly we were then one big happy family. But unfortunately, Vladimir Putin has, from my point of view, he's kind of started the Cold War again. So if we have a competitor or an enemy, then there's a race on to have the, you know, information is power, to have these kinds of information for us as opposed to them. Is there an us and them now?
Well, they could release the information that, yes, we've been contacted because we got a right to know that. Now, if they want to keep the specific military details a secret, that's going to happen.
Well, Putin said something in the papers last week. Apparently, he was giving an address to some sort of academic institution in Russia, and he said the future belongs to whichever country develops AI first. And he said it shouldn't be a monopoly, but if it is a monopoly, whichever country can monopolize that technology will rule the world. So if there were extraterrestrial visitors, they would surely have mastered artificial intelligence. Yeah. You'd give me that, right? And that would be the thing that you would want to back engineer in priority to everything else, I would think, would be that. And yet I don't see any evidence. No, if there was crashes in 47 and so forth, I mean, we're in 2017. It's taking us a darn long time to figure out how to back engineer artificial intelligence. I prefer the simpler, more direct explanation, which is that it's just human progress, and that our early forays into artificial intelligence are just simply human driven, technologically driven by smart people making step-by-step advances.
It could be that and I agree with you about the AI advancements that if you've, like me, are a big fan of 2001, A Space Odyssey, the idea of sentient, self-aware computers is probably not an extremely unbelievable scenario in times to come.
I was going to ask Mark, because you and I seem to believe the witnesses from the Aztec incident, what did they do with all of those bodies? There were supposed to be 15 or 16 alien bodies, and couldn't scientists not have learned a lot about their physiology, and perhaps if they had minds and their thoughts?
I'm sure they have.
I wonder, well, now, where is that research? I mean, that's the real sad thing. If they didn't gain any knowledge from taking all that stuff away and keeping it in government secret hands, well, then it was just kind of a waste.
Well, see, that's the other side of it, too. I mean, governments, and frankly, particularly the American one, seems to be the worst offender. It's almost like this greediness. This is our information. We're going to keep it. We're not going to share it. We're not going to even let our own people know it. We're certainly not going to share it about other countries. And there may be information, biological information, technological information, that if the world scientists were uniformly working on this, we might have a cure for various diseases and, you know, the AI technology that Mark just referred to. But by hoarding all this information to probably a very limited number of people, they are, you know, slowing down the whole potential advance because, you know, the more people you have working on information, the better. I still think part of the reason, maybe Mark and I would disagree on this. I do think back engineering is part of it. I think the problem is that their level of technological sophistication is so far ahead of us. It's almost like, as I mentioned before, it's almost like asking a monkey to, you know, build a computer. They're looking at this stuff and saying, I don't know, what the hell is it?
that seems more plausible to me than the alternative.
Yeah, we're not just going to look at this alien technology and be able to copy it because we're not that good. We're not that smart.
Okay, what we're going to do now is we're going to take a little musical interlude, and then we're going to segue into some of our favorite X-Files things. That's Bobby's favorite sci-fi show. I love it too. And we're going to educate Ed about a show he really should bone up on. So let's get going with some music.
By Ketelby.
Thank you, Bob. By Ketelby. And let's see if this works. Welcome back to The Probe, a talk show about UFOs and associated cultural impacts. I'm Mark O'Connor. I'm here with Robert Selby and Edward O'Reilly. And you just heard the X-Files theme, or an abbreviated version of the X-Files theme, because we're going to spend the rest of the show talking about some of our favorite X-Files shows, characters, themes. And also, before we proceed further, we should tell you about the musical selection that came before that, courtesy of Robert Selby. Bob, what was the name of that particular music that we heard?
In a Monastery Garden.
In a Monastery Garden by who was that, Bob?
Ketelby.
Ketelby.
No relation to R. Selby.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Ah, I just...
I think there's a conflict of interest.
I think there's a conspiracy there. I don't know.
Okay, we're going to talk about the X-Files, and one of the themes on... Actually, I think we'll just talk about maybe some characters, themes, and favorite episodes. And actually, we'll go by quick because we don't have all that much time. And one of the favorite sort of things that Robert and I really love on the X-Files are the Lone Gunmen. And there's three of us as hosts, and there's three members of the Lone Gunmen.
Except they all ended up dead, didn't they, at the end of it? Weren't they all killed?
Yeah, they were unfortunately killed off sort of at the end of The Lone Gunman, which was a spinoff of The X-Files, and at the end of The X-Files.
We may need a different identity, folks. I don't know if I want to be three guys who get bumped off by government agents.
I don't know.
Oh, well, if it's a show about science fiction, they can always come back somehow.
Who killed them? How'd they die? I forget.
They died in an elevator shaft or something.
Foul play?
It was kind of like a suicide. They knew they were going to die, so they kind of sacrificed themselves.
Did they? Was it that black oil stuff? And weren't they infected or something? They were.
No, I don't think so. No.
Was something? I thought there was some kind of disease that they knew they were all infected with, and I don't know if it was alien originated or not, but they realized they were doomed anyway.
I can't imagine why Froehlich wanted to commit suicide, because he was still kind of hot for Agent Scully, you know.
And, well, she rejected him, maybe.
Well, but, you know, I think he would have been a little bit more persistent.
Well, the Lone Gunmen, they kind of served a purpose in the show, which was they would transmit information. There's things that Scully and Mulder needed to know plot-wise.
They were nerds, right? Computer nerds.
Right, so you'd put on the Lone Gunmen, and they kind of lightened up the show a little bit. They had a bit of a humorous touch, and they would transmit information. That would be... You as a viewer weren't quite following what was going on. Then you cut to a scene with the Lone Gunman, and Mulder and Scully had to make this sort of pilgrimage, and these guys were great at getting information, so they would end up explaining things so that you as the audience could follow what the story was. And then as soon as you were sort of up to speed on what had been happening in the plot, the Lone Gunman would disappear again. So in terms of a story element, they serve two purposes.
What's kind of neat now, though, it shows you, even since the time of the X-Files, how even that has become a little bit dated, because they were the computer nerds, the guys who provided the information. Now everybody has access to the same information they do. There's no such thing as a nerd anymore, because everybody's a nerd, because we all have these laptops.
Well, I'm sure there are still super nerds that are...
Super nerds. But I mean, the kind of information access that they provided, everybody has.
Yeah. Well, listen, why don't we give a sample of what the Lone Gunman did for the show? Yeah. Here's a little excerpt. We can sort of see the little bit light humor touch and the provision of information. Here we go.
All right, what do you know about the Gulf War syndrome?
Agent Orange of the 90s.
Artillery shells coated with depleted uranium.
Have you heard of any classified planes being flown during the Persian Gulf War?
Why would you need to expose a secret plane to an air force that runs to Iran whenever you take to the air?
What about UFO activity during that period?
Yeah, UFOs caused the Gulf War syndrome. That's a good one.
That's why we like you, Mulder. Your ideas are weirder than ours.
It works sneaking out these charts.
Tucked him in my pants.
There's plenty of room down there.
You look down, Mulder. Tell you what, you're welcome to come over Saturday night. We're all hopping on the internet to nitpick the scientific inaccuracies of Earth 2.
I'm doing my laundry.
That first excerpt, the speed was wrong on it, because the voices weren't that recognizable.
It sounded like Mulder.
It was a little bit low. Like, it was a little bit slow, I think, for some reason.
Well, I'm going to write a letter of complaint to YouTube right away.
Or maybe that, or Mulder was hungover or something. Did he drink during the show? Was that one of his things? Or
No, not that I know. Watching porn.
Porn, yeah, that was his thing.
That was his main vice, I think.
And he watched videos on Bigfoot, too. I like that, though. The Lone Gunmen are presented as these three nerds, and then it was like, oh, Mulder, you got the craziest ideas. That's why we love you. You're like, you're even further out there than we are.
You make us seem normal.
Yeah.
Well, they, you know, they ended up being, you know, one of the favorite things for some fans on the X-Files.
That's why they got their own show.
That's why they got their own show. And Froehlke, Tom Braidwood, he was one of the producers on the show. So they just sort of got him on the set to, you know, to be one of the characters.
Was he the short, squat guy with the glasses?
That's
right.
Because
there was a guy with long, blonde, stringy hair.
That's Langley.
Langley, okay.
He went to drama school. I heard him in an interview. He also took several semesters of dance.
Langley. You know, I wonder if they got, because they always get these names from different
that's
sci-fi.
That's from BC. That's where they got the name, because it's the name of a BC town.
Hal's instructor. In 2001, where he's losing his marbles towards the end, and he goes back to his computer childhood. My instructor was Mr. Langley, and he taught me to sing a song. And he starts singing Daisy.
Oh, well, I heard him say once about the X-Files, Langley, that it was named after, I don't know if it was his hometown, was because it was a BC town.
Langley, BC, right?
Langley, yeah, right. And that's where they filmed the X-Files in BC.
They took some other things from Canadian place names, too. I can't remember, but there was one in particular that was, I don't know, it was a project or something, but Project Algonquin or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but, you know, it was filmed in Canada, so there were inevitably some.
And, well, Chris Carter often named characters not Canadian, but after figures in his life and childhood. He would honor them by naming the character after them. I heard him say that once, too, in an interview. But...
Right. You know, one of the things I do like about the X-Files, the show really was had an ongoing theme and story, which was the story of the truth about UFOs, whether it was just a government made-up story or if it was extraterrestrials and so forth. And they were kind of ambiguous, but that plot line went on for many, 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 many seasons.
Yeah.
And then they would have what I would call the monster shows. Well, in
which
between,
are some of my favorite.
Right, they'd be one-offs. But the show would be fairly somber and serious for the most part. By season three, though, they kind of hit their stride, and they had an episode called Jose Chung, which featured a college professor who was a part-time novelist who was writing a bestseller about UFO abductions. The plot premise, the conceit that they used, was that Scully was submitting to an interview to describe one of these abduction cases that her and Mulder had investigated, and the show is hilarious, you know, because it's the exact opposite of what you expect. They get to send up every element of a UFO abduction encounter in a funny, unexpected way. So you watch the show and you can't help but crack up.
There were gifted writers. There were, I don't know, maybe five or six or seven writers that would recur on the X-Files. And every now and then, they just wanted to have fun. They would do it in a brilliant way.
And some of them, you know... ironically enough, I like the UFO shows, but some of my favorites were some of the monster shows. The guy who could stretch himself so that he could come up through a grate in the floor or through a key or through a letter slot.
Oh, that's Toombs.
I think that was season one, episode one.
And then he came back for a sequel.
No, Bob?
No, I don't think so. But
do you remember Pusher? Pusher was the guy who could actually put his thoughts
into
another brain and make, like in traffic, he got away from the cops by making them think that they were okay.
Oh, yeah.
And they were actually veering into traffic, and he got out that way. He could actually, it was almost telepathy.
Oh, wow. Like, I actually haven't seen that episode, but the very fact you refer to it as the Pusher, Stephen King published a novel in 1980 called Firestarter. And the father of the main character has that ability. They call it the push. And he can make people see things that aren't there and believe things that aren't there and that aren't real. So I think the X-Files, and there's other examples of this, shamelessly ripped off from the best here and there.
Yeah, that was a good one. But you know, one of my favorite was called Demon. And I've got that on VHS. And it's VHS,
what the hell is that?
Well, I like old school sometimes.
VHS?
It's an exorcism type episode. And I don't know if these are, there's some kind of Eastern European religion. One of their young people has become possessed by either the devil or a demon, and Mulder and Scully are brought in. And there's this great exorcism scene at towards the end, which they're holding the kid down, they're praying over him, whatever, they're thrashing. And it's interesting because all the others are kind of holding him down, but looking off at right angles. Mulder is actually looking right at the kid. And there's a very, really chilling scene at the end where the old guy comes up to Mulder. I call him a head priest, or I don't know if he was a priest or not. Might have even been Greek Orthodox. And he says, yes, the lad will be fine. And he says this to Mulder, but you must be careful. You made eye contact with the demon. It knows you. And then it just goes in Mulder's face. And for one of the few times in the series, he's terrified. You just see it in his face. What?
Well, listen, we actually have a little clip of another character who's terrified of Mulder.
This Scully?
This is from the Jose Chung episode. Let's just take a listen to this. So we had the demon episode, which was truly terrifying, and now maybe a little lighter moment, but apparently Mulder was a scary cat.
Because the proper authority showed up with a couple of men in black. One of them was disguised as a woman, but wasn't pulling it off. Like, her hair was red, but it was a little too red, you know? And the other one, the tall, lanky one, his face was so blank and expressionless. He didn't even seem human. I think he was a mandroid. The only time he reacted was when he saw the dead body.
That's the famous Mulder girly scream.
It's very famous. I mean, that's hilarious.
Was that Mulder going, whoops?
Yeah. Try to imitate it.
I practiced it. Ah!
Oh, Bob, that's pretty good.
I practiced. Yeah. But I love the description.
You practiced doing girly screams?
Okay. Well, that one is famous.
Yeah.
I just love the description of Scully, you know.
One was a woman, but she wasn't pulling it off. Like, she had red hair, but it was too red.
Well, that's her, isn't it?
It is her.
She pulled it off.
No, in the visual, but the fact that he is saying that she's supposed to be a woman, she's a man that's supposed to be a woman, but she wasn't pulling it off. Talk about a dig.
Tell me, you guys are experts on this show. Did either one of them in 9 years ever have a date?
Scully did once, I think.
Mulder would make sort of half-assed passes at Scully from time to time.
Mulder hardly ever had any relationships except with that Maria, what was her name? That blonde one?
Oh, the kind of Russian accent?
Yes.
Yeah,
Maria.
She was like the female deep throat?
Something like that.
Sort of like that.
She had him in for the night, and that was the only time that it was ever hinted at.
Did they sleep
at.
Together?
I think they did. But I mean, that was one of the big jokes. Like, Mulder and Scully were on a case, and they were at this radio station, and there was a guy there that really had a crush on someone, and Mulder was trying to give him advice, you know, and he said, okay, now when you go out on your date, you've got to, you know, bring some candy and flour. And Scully was listening to this with the skeptical look on her face. And suddenly there was a pause, and she said, Mulder, have you ever been on a date?
Yeah, that's great.
I love that.
Yeah, the writers, they hit their stride about season three, and they started introducing a little humor into the shows, and they were really good at it. So, you know, you had your favorite episode, Ed, the demon, where it's played straight.
The ones that he's talking about, those are perhaps the scariest, almost the scariest. Tombs, the guy, and he was 200 year, 150 years old, and he only came to life again. He hibernated.
Licked paper and made a little paper nest.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, but he lived, he had to kill people and get their livers, because he lived on. He lived on the human liver.
Can you imagine the only way to live would be you have to eat liver? I mean, and not even with onions.
And there was a scene where Mulder,
200 years old, must have worked.
Mulder finally gets him, but he has to climb into an escalator shaft. And And actually, Mulder did that scene.
That's the sequel.
He did it in the nude, you know. And because he had to, you know, take his clothes off, and he went.
I'm going
to
give one of those.
That was a girly scream. That was pretty good.
Yeah, that's damn good. I would have said you could do a deep throat, I think we, in fact, have a little bit of deep throat here, don't we?
One of my favorite characters.
Here we go.
Be in danger.
Why?
You've seen things that weren't to be seen. Care and discretion are now imperative.
I saw something.
As I said, I can provide you with information, but only so long as it's in my best interest to do so.
What is your interest?
The truth.
I did see something. But it's gone. They took it from me. They erased it. You have to tell me what it was.
A military UFO? Mr. Mulder, why are those like yourself who believe in the existence of extraterrestrial life on this Earth not dissuaded by all the evidence to the contrary?
Because all the evidence to the contrary is not entirely dissuasive.
Precisely.
They're here, aren't they?
Mr. Mulder, they've been here for a long, long time.
Indeed. Mr. Mulder, they've been here for a long, long time.
Oh, my
time.
God. It's just like him.
Yeah. You don't even have to mimic it. You just have to speak in your normal voice. And
I'm trying to mimic it.
And that's just about one of my favorite lines from the X-Files. You know, just the thought of, you know, if anyone ever contemplated, well, maybe they are here, but this guy who was in the know says they have been here for a long, long time.
Mr. Mulder, they've been here for a long, long time. See, I don't sound like Ed, you got the right pacing. The way you naturally speak, that
and
the rhythm,
how,
the rhythm of your language.
Look at how old school Deep Throat is. He continued to call him Mr. Mulder.
Do you know there are ancient, I've seen pictures of this. I don't know if it's in France or not, but there are ancient, and I don't know how ancient, but, you know, we're talking
cave paintings.
Cave paintings a long time ago, and one of them that I've seen on, you know, not person, but pictures of, it certainly looks like a person in a spacesuit with an antenna going up, and this was painted.
Now that I think about it, we've gone from sex with alien women on UFOs to the reasons for government secrecy surrounding UFOs to backward engineering alien technology. Now we're into ancient aliens. Maybe we can take up more about the ancient aliens or the evidence that they've been coming here for a long, long time on another episode.
Thousands of years ago.
Wow. All right, guys, we're going to have to close the show. We've got 30 seconds or less. So we want to say to our listeners, we hope you enjoyed the probe. For Edward O'Reilly, Robert Selby, and Mark O'Connor, we want to say watch out for the probe. Woo! And tune in next month for another exciting episode. And
ladies and gentlemen, they've been here for a long, long time.
Well said, Edward Deep Throat O'Reilly. Listen, why don't we actually listen to the real Deep Throat say those words from the X-Files.
Mr. Mulder, they've been here for a long, long time.
Okay, I don't know if you can tell the difference. Boy, our host, Edward, is a dead ringer for Deep Throat, at least according to myself and Bob Selby. We'll finish the program off now with a little track from Robbie Robertson, a very famous Canadian singer-songwriter. He had a record released many years ago called Songs from the Underground. Had a track on it called The Lights, all about Native Americans and their relationships with UFOs. They've been seeing the lights for a very long time, as Edward and Deep Throat would both say.
Watch out for the probe.
just on the outskirts of civilization.
No more, the white smoke rises.